Good morning, I'm Sheila Cast. We're On the Record. First, a big thank you from the On the Record team to everyone who made a pledge to WIPR in the past 2 weeks. We couldn't do what we do without you, and we are grateful every day. We're grateful we can talk to interesting people from our community, scientists, teachers, musicians, and writers like Anthony Mall. Mall's new collection of poetry titled You Cannot Save Here, toys with apocalyptic themes. Maybe the end times are here, or maybe it just feels that way. Regardless, how do we keep going? Anthony Mall holds a Master of Fine Arts in Creative Writing and Publishing Arts, and is completing a PhD in English at Morgan State University. Their memoir, Out of Step, a queer coming-of-age story about their experiences in the Army, won a 2018 Lambda Literary Award and the 2017 Nonfiction Prize from the Ohio State University Press. Mall is currently an assistant professor of English at Hartford Community College. Welcome back to the show, Anthony.
Thanks for having me back.
You begin part one of the collection with this quote from Octavia Butler's Parable of the Sower. Quote, I used to wait for the explosion, the big crash, the sudden chaos that would destroy the neighborhood. Instead, things are unraveling, disintegrating bit by bit. Close quote. What appealed to you about the theme of apocalypse?
Well, I've been reading apocalyptic narratives since I was very little, maybe too little. Like, I remember reading The Stand, Stephen King's The Stand, in elementary school. And I've been really interested in apocalypse since then. And when you look at like these brilliant writers like Octavia Butler and countless before her, all the way back to Mary Shelley, they're just interesting ways of asking questions. I think all of us feel about catastrophe and disaster and what we do, whether or not it's apocalyptic, right? Like, I think the themes of apocalypse are themes we care about regardless of whether we like sincerely think the world is ending.
Had you already settled on this theme prior to the pandemic?
Yeah, actually, I sort of half joke that I was writing a book about the end of the world when the world ended. So I've been working on this book for, I think, 4 or 5 years. I've been working on this book. So I was writing originally about how even pre-pandemic, the days around us felt so catastrophic with climate change, with war, with sort of the American political situation, and how just it never seems to end, how we're constantly barraged with this news of disaster. And so the theme and the sort of recurring title, You Cannot Save Here, and how that ties to apocalypse, that was something I was working on, you know, already for years when in March 2020, we got news of sort of early news of lockdowns and outbreaks. And that shifted, you know, that changed the way I approach these poems, and being, you know, in my home for months at a time and considering the pandemic sort of pointed the book in a new direction.
How does the title, You Cannot Save Here, relate to the apocalypse? I thought it was a video game title.
I mean, yeah, a little bit. I think it's meant to tie a whole bunch of things together. You Cannot Save Here is like an error message you get on your computer sometimes. It's ties back this idea in video games of like saving your game and where you're allowed to save. It's also meant to invoke like a sort of religious language of being saved. And then of course the apocalypse of what we can protect and save in our world and what we can't during times of disaster. And so it's the title of the book, and it's also the title of 30 poems in the book. And it makes us sort of, each time it repeats, ask the reader to think about what it means that you're hearing it again.
Let's hear some poetry. Would you read These 10 Weird Tricks Will Change Your Workplace Forever?
Absolutely. So this poem comes from, you can tell from the title, it's sort of the language of clickbait, those little ads that encourage you to like click through so whoever can get clicks and get advertising money for it. And so I was considering, oh, what would it mean to click through and what you find to be actually sincere advice for changing your workplace forever? So this is These 10 Weird Tricks Will Change Your Workplace Forever. Do one thing each day that scares the bosses. Mention the march. Mention motherhood. Learn to love your ugly lack of utility. Remember, curiosity sings to herself, humming happy birthday in Red Planet Exile. B, rose hips staining the teeth of unsympathetic gear trains. Fill a disposable project full of waged minutes. Write poetry at your desk addressed to office Xerox. Close up shop for an hour to stare at the sun. Be honest with your colleagues about the terror blotting you out.
Tell me more about what inspired this poem.
I mean, a few things, actually. I was thinking about, I was thinking about a lot of these things during a recent total eclipse. It was a total solar eclipse a few years ago, and it was like a big thing. It'd been like the first solar eclipse in decades, and all over the country, people were like going outside in the middle of the day. And I remember feeling this weird, like, existential crisis of our smallness in the scope of like planets and the solar system. And I thought about that in the context of the workplace, and I'd already been writing these themes about the end of the world. And so it was just an attempt to sort of connect all those things and what it means. You know, a lot of these poems in this collection are about what it means to be in a workplace and pretending things are normal when, as in during COVID, things are very not normal.
Well, yeah, those last lines, be honest with colleagues about the terror blotting you out. Do you think more people are scared than are letting on?
I think so. You know, I don't think I'm alone in considering how these times feel catastrophic. I think it's anytime you turn on the news, anytime you consider the state of the world, whether it's climate change or COVID or war or anything else, it's hard not to think what it means on a grander scale. And then, you know, to reverse that and think what it means to you individually. I think a lot of people are scared and they're considering these things and they're going to things like apocalyptic literature to make sense of it.
Well, your poems explore the 24-hour news cycle and social media and the climate crisis, all fairly recent stressors. Do you think your poetry speaks more closely to people in your age group?
I don't know. I think like when you look at sort of the allusion, the references I make throughout the poems, it's pretty broad. Like I make reference to opera and to Greek tragedy and to mythologies, all these sort of much older classic, a lot of biblical references. So a lot of older classic allusion, but then I also reference, like you said, like pop culture and video games and pro wrestling references throughout the book. And so I actually don't know who it is that gets all of that, right? Who's, maybe it's all of us, like all of us, you know, it's in the nature of the information age is we all have all access to all information at any given time. And so maybe plenty of people can access all the various high culture, low culture, pop culture, countercultural references. Or maybe it's a very unique person who's going to get all of it. And I actually include in the book sort of a page that sort of spells out all the references so I can feel like it's like a cheat sheet almost that people can refer to.
Yeah, tell me more about that. I mean, there is this list of references with explanations, including films and song lyrics, the Greek deities, the characters from Norse mythology. It is quite a cheat sheet. Did you feel it was necessary?
Yeah, I think it's also just in like the spirit of how I write. Like there's plenty of like in sort of subtitles, there's sort of these after this person, I forgot if I'm pointing to who inspired the poem. And then on that cheat sheet, I'm directly spelling out what I'm talking about at any given moment. I think I like that just in the sense of I'm not just creating this from nothing, right? Like all writers are pulling on their prior knowledge and prior inspiration and this big network of stories and poems that go back throughout our history. And so I like just being transparent about it, being like, oh, here's what got me here. Here's what I'm talking about, to point both for the sake of clarity so people know what I'm talking about and also just, you know, maybe it's because I'm an academic too, just like giving credit too, to the people who came before me.
This is On the Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cass speaking with Baltimore writer Anthony Maul about You Cannot Save Here, their new collection of poetry. Let's hear more. Would you read from page 40? This is part of the poem, You Cannot Save Here.
Sure. This is You Cannot Save Here. And it starts with an epigraph. The epigraph's actually from a video game I loved as a kid, Final Fantasy III. And it's the few others who washed up here with us passed away from boredom and despair. my favorite apocalypse happens halfway through, as in everything comes down and you've got to keep going, as in you are witness to the trappings of classic catastrophe, a shake, a shockwave, separation, your memories split open, and what's left is a pitch you recognize as the wind and an undone coast that whispers behind you, loss, loss. A whole year has passed, everything washed in an autumn palette, and a dove or dying elder insists an elsewhere and someone you knew is alive out there, and you've got to keep going.
Wow. Your poems are not trying to find a silver lining. You aren't trying to move people quickly from stress or sadness to hope.
I think that's right. I think I'm against the spirit of like the happy ending, and the poems are more like a sober look at where we're at and what it means for us and our lives now. And I don't think that's always optimistic. I don't think it's necessarily pessimistic. I think a couple of the early readers of the book told me, hey, these are dark poems, but I don't know that that's wholly true. I'd like to think that they're a little bit Epicurean, as in like the world's ending. So what are we going to do to find small joys? And then I think I invoke this a little bit in the later poems of, hey, this is all coming down. So what can we imagine building after it? But to get to either of those things, the joy or optimism, I first just have to like completely and soberly acknowledge the moment we're in and how it feels.
How was the experience of writing this collection of poetry different from writing your memoir 5 years ago?
When I first started writing the memoir, I knew what I wanted to write, and it changed shape as I moved through the years of writing it. But I knew from the start, hey, I know this moment is something unique in my life. Let me write about that. And when I started these poems, which were started as part of my dissertation, my PhD, I was just writing poems. I was just writing the poems as they came to me, as I was inspired to write things. And eventually they emerged as a theme. And I sort of pursued that theme. I did the scholarly work on that theme, and it drove me further. But it wasn't that I knew where I wanted to go from the start, like the first book. It was figuring out what themes are emerging in the first year or two of writing poetry, and then how can I build around those themes to make a sort of a unified collection.
Where do you write, and how do you write? What time of day?
So I should have an answer that I have a responsible regular practice. That's what I teach my students, and sincerely, it's what I believe makes work get produced, is having a routine, having a scheduled sort of plan for how you write. But the truth is that I am constantly fighting to make more time for writing in my life. And so the initial idea generation for me often comes from like when I'm out on a walk. I'll be walking around, whether it's in my life or like to, you know, get my steps in or whatever, and ideas will come to me, and I will jot them down in the notes app in my phone. I'll go from like basic ideas, lines or phrases that really delight me that I want to use, or even like drafting whole poems. All of that happens on my phone initially. And then when I have time, I sculpt out an hour a couple times a week, maybe, should be more, but honestly, that's what it is. And there I'll craft what are fragments into complete poems or essays or short stories and really build them. And then I have a really robust revision process that includes a beta reader and a writing group, and they give me some pretty robust feedback. But it starts with just something coming to me and me trying to get it down in my phone before I forget it.
And that's why we're getting your deep thoughts about this in your phone.
Yeah, I don't think I'm alone in that, right? I think that so many of us are often using that. What used to be this sort of romantic idea of sort of the poet's notebook or the writer's notebook that we carry around with us. I think so many of us have transformed that into our phones. And so I think there are plenty of notes out there with like really beautiful, meaningful things in them.
Well, thanks for talking to us about the poetry and about the process. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Baltimore writer Anthony Maul's new collection of poetry is titled You Cannot Save Here. The book has received the Gene Feldman Poetry Prize and won the Washington Writers Publishing House Poetry Contest. Ma will be speaking at the Ivy Bookshop on October 13th with Frederick writer Suzanne Feldman. Details at the On the Record page at WYPR.org. Short break on the record. When we're back, a Stoop Story. I'm Sheila Cass. Stay with us. Thank you.